Ladies and gentlemen,
let's get ready to rumble!
James catches, puts up a three. Won't go. Rebound, Bosh. Back out to Allen. His three-pointer. Bang! Tie game with 5 seconds remaining. Fernandez, left field. It's deep.
David Beckham, oh goodness me! Pure genius from David Beckham.
Watch the throw, now he's going to do it again with his legs. No, he will throw. Lobs it to the end zone!
Touchdown! Devin Smith!
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up for the buzzer.
Banks it in! Ha-ha! He banks in the three!
And welcome to the Locker Room Extra. It's your Friday night view of sports, where we put in some of the highlights from the last week or so. Tonight's show, we're going to have a little bit from last Saturday's Locker Room, plus some of the highlights from the cricket commentary and the interviews from the cricket show. So I hope you enjoy that. Just sit back and relax. And welcome to the Locker Room Extra, your Friday night wrap of all the interesting interviews that we've been doing over the last few weeks. Today we're going to start with some of the interviews from the cricket show from round two, where we chatted to a number of the people from the clubs and just heard what their thoughts were. On this edition of the Locker Room Extra, we're going to look at cricket history. Firstly, we start talking to Ken Peace, the local cricket history whiz, from an interview that we did in November with him on the Locker Room, and that's followed up by an interview with Doug Dyle from TIAB, who's the historian at that club and also involved in developing some of the history for the MPCA. So I hope you enjoy both of these.
Every year, around about Christmas time, you always try to get a book out there on cricket and satisfy the thirst and the demand for it. And you've got one in front of us now, the Pictorial History of Australian Test Cricket. Tell us a bit about the background of that one, Ken. Let's talk about that book specifically, then we'll broaden things out.
Yeah, I'm very lucky to be able to work full-time in the sport that I really love. Like, I've been a footballer and cricketer all my life, but also a collector. And I used to send over to England from the age of 10 for cricket books from the various dealers. And my dad would line up in Queen Street at the bank. In those days, he had to send an international draft rather than, there was no such thing as PayPal or the internet. And so he'd line up at lunchtime and would send over the money, and then I'd work for Dad at the weekends to try and pay him back. But I bought a big collection of photos and books, and literally it was a huge collection, and I was pushing this big barrow load of things up the stairs, and Susan said, they can't all be for us. I said, oh, there might be a book in these, darling. So, and so it's proved, because there was hundreds of beautiful photos. So this is a lovely pictorial book. It's my 72nd book overall. I think I'm the... from living authors in Australia, I'm the most published of all, both newspapers and books. But what was really pleasing too, a little sideline with the Test cricket being on from today and at the Wacker last weekend, my other book here, or one of them, Great Australian Cricket Stories, on the Dolphin Pools ad. There's a Dolphin Pools have been advertising, right. and they show it right on the book, and the guy dozing in his swimming pool going to sleep. Not through the words, of course. They were good words. Yeah, so it's been a heap of fun. fun to be involved in cricket. And as I said, I've just come back from the over-60s championships and we had a lot of fun over there too. In sport, there's a great fraternity. You know, there's so many lifelong mates that you make. And before we had Craig Entwistle and young Jason Wiley in, both two of my boys. And as I was saying, I was involved with the Frankston Club as the captain, virtual captain coach of the thirds for years. And all those really good players came through, Groves and Nankervis and Luke Walker. Luke captains the first 11 now. And probably my proudest moment as a mentor down there, our first 11 got through to the first 11 final against St Kilda. They were far better side, St Kilda, but I had eight of my boys in that 11, starting 11, and they all played tough, hard, sporting, but they're all my boys and they were playing in the right way and in the right spirit. So that was such a proud moment.
And that was a ripping final too, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The one that was only sort of one or two runs in it?
That was a couple of years later with University. And that was at University against Dandenong, Frankston Dandenong. And Dandenong had the two Pattinsons and Siddle. But that was a ripper game.
Actually, talking about teaching young players to play it the right way and that sort of thing, of course, coming out of that... the Hughes inquest was the comments about the ugly underside of cricket, according to the coroner, which involves sledging and that sort of thing. And I think Cricket Australia have said, yes, something we've got to look into. There's always going to be sledging in all sports, isn't there? Is it a matter of just making sure that you don't overstep the line, do you think?
Yeah. And during the week in Perth, there was banter, but it was friendly banter because we've all played against each other for 40 years. So, it's the true test of test cricket, it's not only a test of your actual physical skill, but mentally wise as well. And if a guy is thought to be mentally weak, well, they will attack him, you know. Like, it won't be long there before you're going to play a big get-out shot, you know, death or glory sort of shot.
Yeah.
So it is a matter of testing out the players, but as long as you say it's you don't step over the line, things are okay.
Just looking at this pictorial history of the Australian cricket, when we were mentioning Kendon, just some of the photos on the cover, that you've got Bradman up in the top left-hand corner. Looks like the Australian team...
from
next
New Zealand
up,
in Wellington, yeah,
in
2016.
Wellington, yeah.
Clem Hill.
Yes. And, he looks a big unit, doesn't he?
Clem Hill is the only Australian captain to punch the chairman of selectors in the mouth of a selection committee. He was fiery, Clem.
Okay, then Stephen Smith. Bottom punch, you've got Steve Smith. Looks like he just picked up a ton there. You've got something from the Bodyline series, someone getting hit in the chest there.
Woodfull. And then Stan McCabe,
what an amazing stories about him in the bottom right-hand corner. So there's some great photos. Inside the front cover here, we've got what you've called this one, Cricket's Coliseum to be. So it's the MCG in 1877. What a ripping photo that is, because it looks like your typical suburban ground.
Ground does look a bit rough.
The surface. and a magnificent, I imagine that was... round about where the old members' ground stand was there.
Yeah, they've actually got a cycling track around the MCG in those days, and there's a lovely public grandstand, and so it costs $4 to get in, which is the equivalent of around about $50, maybe even $100 now, Australian, but they filled it out. And in those days, when the first test match was played, Melbourne's population was only 200,000, and they got 10 or 12,000 to the first day of those 200,000. So it's just amazing in Australia, the psyche for sport. We just love sport, no matter what it is. Cricket and footy, soccer really making a play. Tennis has been so popular for years with our Davis Cup stars. Yeah, it's just one of the lovely things. Like, you can go through depressions, but people will still have a smile on their face because they're playing sport.
I noticed one of the chapters, I'm just going to focus on the 1890s, and you've called that one a Grace-led revival, because when Dr. Grace toured with the MCC in the 1890s, that actually promoted a whole lot of cricket clubs. There's lots of the local cricket clubs who actually started in 1892. Crib Point and Barnier are two of them. There's about, I think, Tybes another one. There's at least seven or eight of the local clubs, and other ones up Malvern Way and scattered right throughout the suburbs, all-star to the cricket club following that tour.
Yeah, W.G. Grace, if you like, he was the Bradman of English cricketers, a grand old man with a giant beard. But he was quite a character, and he was actually paid about $250,000 as an amateur to come out and captain that team that you're talking about.
Big money in 1892.
Yeah, huge, isn't it? Yeah. Lord Sheffield was a philanthropist of immense proportions, and he summoned Sussex Park, where Lord Sheffield had his little pad, around about 200 acres, to a huge, beautiful property. And the doctor said, well, I'm not sure if I can come because I don't know if you can afford me, Lord Sheffield. He said, well, what would you like? He said, well, I need $250,000. I need a locum for my medical practice. And, of course, my wife and children will come with me as well. And he was the amateur, so... And he came, but it was his rules, Grace's rules. There was an upcountry game, maybe in Ballarat, and he was bowled by the very first ball of the game. And he just calmly replaced the bail and stood up batting again. He says, I always take a trial ball.
and hasn't he famously been said that, look, they've come to watch me bat, yep, not to watch you bowl, so I'm going to stay
same. Same man. So I've got lovely olden pictures in there, but right through to Shane Warne cavorting at Trent Bridge with a stump in his hand and giving it to the crowd, and Stephen Smith, who's one of the great players now, and I'm sure that in times to come he's going to be amongst the 10 best Australian cricketers of them all. So not just a memory lane, but recent nostalgia as well.
Yeah, some fascinating stories, and they seem to be tied up pretty much in the decades from 1870 through to... Yeah. 1980s, over the page, we get into 2010, as you're saying. Yeah.
Do you reckon in 100 years' time there'll be another author writing about Test cricket from the 2016 to 2100, or do you reckon it's all going to be over in the next couple of generations?
Yeah, people worry about the future of Test cricket, but you come the Melbourne and Sydney Test matches with Pakistan here, they're just about the number one, number two ranked Test team in the world. They're a great team. People will come. People will come.
But are they coming? I mean, did they?
Oh, yeah. Perth was pretty good. Like, they got, for Perth, more than 12,000 for each of the first 3 days when the game was really, really on. South Africa, it was a comeback. Australia need to be winning for the big crowds to come at Christmas time, but they still will. We'll get 70,000 plus on Boxing Day, and come Sydney Cricket Ground the first 2 days from January 3, 40,000 plus. So, yeah. Cricket is fine. People love the 2020 cricket, the younger people. I took she was then 18, my daughter, to the first 2020 game, and she loved it. But now she likes Test cricket more than the limited over stuff.
Well,
just a matter of being able to introduce them to the game.
Yeah. So you think it's got a future?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Regardless of T20.
Yeah.
Now another chapter I've opened up on the 1960s, because that's about the time of my youth started to register with that. I think Richie Benno took over with around about 58 or so. Sort of my memories, and then the 60s, Calypso Magic, and everybody can still thinks about that magnificent series when the West Indies came out here, and some of the amazing tests that happened, and the spirit of cricket, with Worrell and Benno, and so many exciting stories. What a great time that was.
Well, after the tied test match, the cricket's first tied test, the greatest cricket match that has ever been played, all the players in the old Queensland Cricketers Club just got around this huge table, West Indian Australian, and they just swapped stories for hour after hour. And Lindsay Klein, who's not with us anymore, said it was just about the greatest night of his life, because the camaraderie and getting to know each other. And years later, they'd keep on having all these reunions for 10, 20, 30 years after their centenary test match, after the 1960-61 tied test match, and they were just like brothers. He said, you wouldn't just shake their hand, you would give them a hug like a father, son, or two really close brothers. And so that's what cricket brought, and that really helped revive and inspire people for generations, because that was the way cricket even now is played. Like, you were worried about the future Test cricket. In these days, you're only averaging, say, 2.5 runs and over. Now it's 3.5 runs and over. Mm. You know, to watch Warner make a century in a hurry, yeah. He's exhilarating. Mm. You know, to see that young pace man coming around the wicket, Kagiso Rabada from South Africa, came around the wicket to Khawaja, who's just about the best batsman in the country, certainly amongst the best three, and he went around the wicket and he castled the ball in. He was too quick for him, and his off-peg just flattened.
Yeah.
Gee, it was a memorable moment. One of the best balls I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And we were right behind it in the press box last weekend. So when you've got talent like that, cricket has to stay alive. Mm. Yeah.
Australia are batting. Dave Warner out for one. Caught de Kock, and gee, he can play a bit that boy. Bowled Philander. Joe Burns out. LBW to Kyle Abbott. So you've got Usman Khawaja and Steve Smith not out. And I think they might be just putting the covers down again. But just had a couple of overs near 5 for 2. Halfway through the seventh over, so.
Ken, do you think then that there's a need, just getting back to that theme, to be continually tinkering with the game? I mean, Mark Taylor was calling for 4-day test matches and that sort of thing. They're talking, you know, of course, we've got the day-night test matches now, and other innovations to keep it interesting. Do you think that has to be the way to go?
Taylor wants to play Thursday to Sunday, finishing on the big finale. But I'm happy for the 5 days. I'm happy for that to be able to continue. But certainly the day-nighters, and if you have to make the grass on the turf pitch a little bit longer, well, that's going to suit the bowlers. You're not going to get that dull India-England game that we've got currently, you know, played on the Hume Highway on a road. It's going to be far more conducive. Because in the old days, when they first started, and looking at some of the old pictures, they were uncovered wickets. So a boy like a Trumper, he made 11 centuries on one tour of England, and nobody else could touch the ball, even the other Australian champions. He was just on another stratosphere, all uncovered wickets. But it'll bring out the skills. So I'm happy for, if more people are going to come to day-night test matches, let's play them from 2 o'clock to 11 o'clock. Yeah.
The Dennis Lilly's been in Melbourne during this week, and I notice in the chapter in the 70s, you've got a few great photos here of Lilly. In my mind, he was the number one fast bowler.
Certainly he and Thompson, the number one combination.
Yeah, but just something about Lilly, well, overcoming the back injury, and also when he slowed down, this to be a superb medium pace bowler and swing bowler as well.
Oh, gee, don't tell Dennis that he was a medium pace bowler.
Right at the end, I reckon, he probably accepted.
He'll give you that glare, okay. I can tell you. So fiery on the field of Dennis Lilly, like a lovely man off the field. He'll show you his wine collection and all this sort of thing and just be a pussycat off the field. But across the line, he was lethal. And I was at the test match, this shows my age too, in the early 80s with Javan Meandad. And literally, Meandad was a... Lilly kicked him in the pads after a midweek collision. And Meandad hit his bat up and he was about to dong Lilly. And poor Tony Crafter, the umpire, was in the middle of them. He was the meat in the sandwich. It really it wasn't a good look for cricket. And Dennis... That night we were thinking, okay, well, he'll be suspended for, two, three, maybe even half the season. He got 2 one-day games, and the two umpires complained of that, so he got a little bit longer, but it was still a crazy time for cricket. But as a fast bowler, he was magnificent. There was a game at the MCG, and Lilly was in his 40s by then. Brad Hodge was batting, a young Brad Hodge, 17 years old. And at the very first ball, Lilly bowled from the far end, the Great Southern Stand end. Hodge danced down the wicket and hit him over the top of point for 3 or 4. And the next one came straight at his rib cage, like Lilly, even in mid-40s. And afterwards in the room, Marsh was keeping it, of course. He says, no one dances out to the great DK, he said. Yeah.
Actually, Lilly said the other day, I picked up a piece, and he said that he counted the other day in the Perth warm-up 11 players on the ground and 17 support staff. That's part of the problem that we've got at the moment?
I don't mind the science there. Sometimes you shouldn't have all support staff on there at once. It's certainly better than, say, the early 80s, where you had the team manager, Bob Merriman, terrific bloke from Geelong. He was actually hitting slips catches to the players, but he was in his suit and tie and all this sort of thing. So we have improved. Maybe we have gone over the top. But I'm all for the physiotherapists, and if you have to have the life coaches and the people that help your mind to be better, I certainly don't mind that.
Mm. Now, I flipped into the 70s now, and you've got a little package or a little bit that you have is most of them where you've got milestones of the decade. One of them being Bill Laurie becomes the first Australian to carry his bat in a test in Sydney when he was 60-not out of 116. But this is an interesting one. No LBWs are awarded against Australian batsmen for the entire Ashes series. And the Englishman had five LBWs awarded against them in the series. But I think the umpiring has changed a bit in the last couple of years. I think they're far more thinking that they can give it on the front foot.
Oh, yeah.
A lot more people out LB nowadays.
No, it's true. In those days, you had two Australian umpires. Now they're totally neutral umpires, and I don't cast any aspersions on the boys that have been before. I think it is sad, though, if a Paul Rifle is the best umpire in Australia, he actually can't get to umpire in front of his home crowd.
And Simon Telfer had that issue too for a couple of years.
Totally, totally true. His last years, he wasn't able to do an Australian test match. I think if you're at the top of the tree, no matter where you come from, you deserve to be in your hometown. You'll be such a proud moment.
Mm. Geoffrey Boycott dismissed for his first Ashes duck in 47 innings. That happened in, 1979?
He'd be about it for 3 hours.
To get the duck, he probably would have. So in terms of your favourite English players, we've got, occasionally talk about them too, sadly, but I noticed some photos here of Tony Gregg as an example, and we just mentioned Boycott there. And,
famous one. Oh, Rick McCosker with his broken jaw.
Here's Rick McCosker batting with his jaw all strapped up in the centenary test. Any particular Englishman who stand up in your memory?
Oh, I like Barrington and Edrich, so that goes back to the 60s era. But in that 1974 series, we talked about that with Tomo and Lily. And I was at the Sydney Cricket Ground on the hill, and there had big rain clouds coming in from behind us. It was the washout this day's play on the Sunday. And Lily hit Edrich right under the ribs, and gee, hit him so hard. It broke ribs, but he just faced up again.
Yep.
He had to go off a few minutes later. He had been hit so hard, but the crowd was yelling, kill, kill, kill. It really was on, and with the big, ominous, dark clouds coming in, it was such a fortress. It really was a coliseum, the old days of Roman times. But, gee, they bowled fast. And Thompson kept on bouncing the ball over the top of Marsh's heads for four byes. He was lethal. He was so express. You would have hated to be at the other end. But boys like Barrington and Edrich just hung in there and kept on trying as hard as they could.
And, of course, was it the Edrich injury that brought Colin Cowdrey out to replace him?
And wasn't that amazing?
At 41, 42?
Yeah, he was, and he was built like the Michelin man because he had all this armour on.
Yeah.
He actually came out for an earlier test match in Perth, and he actually, where the dressing room is positioned, you sort of walk past the bowler to get to before you take guard. And so Cowdrey walked past Jeff Thompson and said, "Pleased to meet you, Colin Cowdrey here." You can imagine what Tomo said to him. "Get your old bastard, you know."
I remember at the MCG, not long after he'd come out, and I can't remember whether it was against Victoria or not, but he was in second slip, and there was a thick edge, and everybody thought the ball's gone to the slips. Cowdrey caught it one hand and stuck the ball in his pocket.
That's
looked around behind him and see where the ball was.
He actually liked to do that. I played in a social game at the Punt Road, and he was my first slip. I was playing for the Crusaders, and I actually got a few wickets this day buying some leggies. He did the very same thing. "Where's the ball gone, Swan?" He said to our captain, you know where it is, Kipper. It's in your pocket.
He was a good slipper, wasn't he?
He was a very good player.
For a big man.
And more than 100 test matches, and he became a knight as well of cricket, which is magnificent.
Just looking at couple of photos. You've got a photo of a very, very young Ian Healy here in the 80s. Over the years, let's take the last 50 years when you've been following Test cricket. Where do you rate all the Australian wicketkeepers?
Well, Healy as a technician was just about the best of them. Rodney Marsh, and he'll keenly admit this.
Iron Gloves, wasn't it the first nickname, Iron Gloves?
Well, he was, but he was roly-poly, amazing. Wasn't as svelte as any of us at all. But he was big, and he was a virtual backstop. But he worked so hard at his fitness, and he became the best performed of them all. And as a batsman, he was really exciting to watch Rodney Marsh as a left-hander. But Healy's technical work was just magnificent. And every morning, if they're having breakfast down in the hotel, he'd be in the car park with a golf ball, and he'd be working on his skills just to get him in the feet sharp in the end. Probably the greatest test match I've watched overseas was in Bridgetown, and Healy was keeping, and this was the test where West Indies chased down 311, Lara got 153, and Healy dropped the number 11, Courtney Walsh, just in the last overs, and he knew he was gone because he said his feet just weren't moving anymore. He was 33-34, and that was one of his very last test matches because he knew that he couldn't do it anymore, and he's too proud to continue under duress. He said, I'm only 80% of what I was. That's it. I'm going to retire.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, and of course, Gilchrist, serviceable keeper, but there haven't been a batsman like him. Maybe the cock will become as good as him.
Yeah, Gilly is better than serviceable. He wasn't a champion like an Ian Healy as a gloveman, but to see him bat the way that he batted, he was the first to hit 100 sixes in Test cricket. Yeah. And we were at Hobart, and I've done a lot of travelling over the years, and he hit the ball into Church Street. Little Murali was bowling, and the ball was so valuable that someone hit it in a garden. And Gilchrist and his management had to put out an SOS. Someone's got the ball. Adam would really like it for his collection.
Yeah,
and it was returned in the end. But magnificent clean strike of the ball.
Ken, would you say, talking about the West Indies now, would you say Brian Lara is probably the best batsman they've ever had?
Well, he's got a, like we talked about Frank Worrell before, Viv Richards, he'd just swagger in and just belt you, and no helmet on or whatever. Lara's up there, but I think the best cricketer of all from the Windies, from the Caribbean, is Sir Gary Sobers. He's 80 now.
Bowl and field.
Oh, yeah.
Brilliant.
He would still make runs now, Gary Sobers. Yeah. He was a star, like Bradman, like Patrick Patterson, the fast bowler, met Don Bradman, and he said, you're not that big and tall. And Bradman said, I could still make runs against you, Patrick. Oh, what do you think your average would be? Oh, well, I reckon I'd probably average about 60. Oh, well, that's not that many. Then you averaged 100 in Test cricket. Then Don said, well, this is now. I am 70 years old. I'll still average 60 against you. Yeah, Sober's number one.
Sober's used to open the bowling, didn't he, on occasion?
And then bowl spin.
Come back and bowl spin. Yeah. So he was a pretty handy cricket.
Both wrist and orthodox.
Yeah.
And it's a shame that they didn't have the same television footage now, because they could have had some brilliant packages. I can remember seeing one of those 16 mil films of Sobers when he made 220 or thereabouts, and it was
in the rest of the world.
Yeah, it was just amazing.
Yeah, I helped Terry Jenner, Shane Warne's coach, write his book, and he said all you do with Sobers was try and give him the single and get him off strike. Bowls at the other bloke.
How do you rate Nathan Lyon? Because he's a bit of an enigma. I mean, on fitness, he's taken 220, 230 wickets.
More wickets than any other Australian offspinner.
Yeah, he's one of the most successful slow bowlers outside Warne.
And yet,
we've had some great leggies.
I reckon even now, though, people have doubts as to whether he's as good as he should be.
Perth didn't suit him because of the conditions. You don't get the side spin that you do. He'll be good in this test match, and he's really integral to their attack. But for a boy from Canberra to unsung, he was uncovered by Darren Berry, well known to this show, as a 2020 player, and for him to come through, it's been one of the great success stories of Australian cricket in the last 6 or 7 years.
So the first book we talked about was The Pictorial History of Australian Test Cricket. The other one you've got in with Ken is Great Australian Cricket Stories. Now, I know you've been a sensational collector of those. Looking to some of the chapter names. The first chapter is 99.94, so I'm guessing Bradman. That's something to do with Don Bradman.
Yeah, this is the best of my, if you like, I was in a journalist for 35, 40 years, so this is the best of all the stories that I've ever done, really. And my interviews, I interviewed Dennis Lilly once for radio for RSN here in Melbourne, and Dennis, unless he was promoting a book, he didn't really care much for the media, but he came off after 6 or 7 minutes, he said, really enjoyed that, Ken. That was good. Because I was just bouncing off him the same that we're having fun today.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you know a little bit about their background, that wasn't right, Dennis. Yes, it was. No, it wasn't. This happened. Oh, you're right, Ken, aren't you? You know? So you can have a lot of fun with the boys.
Yeah. Sultan of Spin is another chapter.
We know who that
I'm
is.
I'm guessing that's Mr. S.K. Warne.
Yeah. What a fantastic player, and what a privilege for all of us to be able to be around.
I've seen it,
Like for those that watch Don Bradman bat, so special, but for watch Warne bat, and I can still remember where I was when he flippered Richie Richardson, really started his career in Melbourne with one that just scuttled through. And I was sitting with Graham Wilson from the Four Kinsmen, the old band, in the old cigar stand, five rows in, and they thought it was a wrong. I said, I don't think it is. I think it was that faster one that he's got going. It was the Terry Jenner-inspired flipper.
Yeah.
Still one of the greatest balls of all.
Yes, I can remember in that same series that I'm sure it was at Sydney, and I've been sitting and watching and waiting for Warne to come on. They just threw the ball to Warne, and my sister rang it, and I just sort of said, I can't talk now. Warne's about the bowl.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So yeah. Hung up and let the ring back about half past six.
It's a little bit like Barry Richards, the star South African who comes here a lot and is over here for Hobart for the current Test match. Well, I asked him once about watching the two wars, Steve Waugh, Mark Waugh, and he just shook his head and said, well, if I knew that Mark Waugh was going to make 100, I'd cancel golf for the next 2 days and I'd watch every ball. But if Steve Waugh was to make 100, wouldn't bother, I'd just keep playing. So it's just interesting, the perception. Like, he was a stroke maker and he just loved the boys that played their shots. A little bit like a David Hooks, you know, to see David Hooks make a big 100 was just a privilege.
Chapter 8 you've called Boys Will Be Boys. What's that one about?
A little bit of that on-field stuff that we were talking about before.
Banter and a little bit beyond banter.
And the real characters of the game. Cricket's a game that brings out so many funny moments. So that's got a lot of funny incidents in there. All good fun.
Now, the forward to your pictorial history, that was...
Chris Rogers.
Chris Rogers. Fantastic.
Yeah, 24 of his last 25 test matches came from the age of 35 plus. So we're still half a chance, really, aren't we, to be able to play?
and you've got a quarter of a chance.
And in the one on the cricket yarns, you've got Colin McDonald. Writing for that.
Yeah, who was involved in that famous Tide test match. Still one of the... still going well. He's 87. He just has to get to 88. So he's only a few weeks away from that, which is great.
What are your thoughts on fast bowler workloads and the need to manage them properly? I mean, that was never a problem a couple of decades ago, was it?
Boys would bowl for 2 hours Tuesday, Thursday. But these days, like Scott Boland, who's a local boy, Captain's Frankston, he's allowed to bowl 36 balls only in the nets per training session. Then he'll do his massage and rehab and have a bat. But 36 balls, he says, but Master, they're full tilt. Yeah. You know, I bowl them full tilt, whereas guys might do some warm-ups, but... I don't know. I think there's a lot of injuries involved, and I'm just not sure if the sports science boys in this case have got it right.
No, yeah. I'm not either.
No, yeah. Lily was saying that, and he's a fellow who has had injuries and fought back from them.
Yeah,
but there were so many that didn't have injuries. You know, McGrath didn't have a back injury. He had that famous confrontation with Alan Turner, wasn't it? Fred Truman, Wes Hall. You know, you could go through all those famous fast bowlers. Didn't break down.
Yeah, the guys were the pure actions, whereas the boys that have got slightly complicated actions, like a Sean Tate, he'd finish up almost contorted as he bowled. He was, you just can't bowl. You can bowl fast for a while, but not for long. Mm. Yeah.
So if you're talking superb actions, my mind springs to Michael Holding, Whispering Death, I think they called him.
Amazing.
Just a superb action, wasn't it?
And quick.
Looked so athletic.
And quick. And another one of those lovely boys off the field, but on the field, he was good. He was very good.
Of course, down here a few years ago, Collis King played, and he was 53. He's actually 6 months younger than me. I was the oldest cricketer in first cricket, and he was the second. So he was this young Collis King. I remember he played at Flinders. It was really interesting when you play a game with him, because he still played very well. He could do those lofted cover drives for six at the age of 53 or four.
Yes, right.
And he'd just sit around with you after the game, have a quiet beer and talk for 2 hours telling you stories.
Yeah.
And it used to swing around back to the days of World Series cricket. He had a lot of stories there about Mr. Packer. but that can get lost, that chance to sit around and have a chat and a quiet drink after the game.
No, totally on. And Rodney Hogg was another who played at Red Hill there. And apparently the boy that fielded it at mid-off, that was all he could do, was literally he was there to shine the ball.
That was Craig Keppel, who joins our commentary team from time to time.
There you go. And the Hoggy, I think the ball, he wasn't happy one day about the shineability of it that Craig had given it. And he said, I don't need him anymore, just send him back to the seconds. great character, Rodney Hogg.
Yeah. That's right, and we interviewed Rodney maybe 2 years ago, and actually put the name Craig Keppel. He said, "Oh, look, I don't have I've no idea about the names of the players. Was he the bloke at mid on? Oh, okay, yeah, I sort of remember him. But he was sort of, I don't know his name. Who was that? You know, he was a bit like that. I think he exaggerated a bit. I think he remembered a lot more than he was giving forward there.
But there's some really good cricketers, like obviously Young Dart, you know, got 100 just a couple of weeks ago, maybe last round.
Quality players.
Yeah, these boys are very, very good. And a lot of the boys that are dominating provincial now have been to our club at Frankston Peninsula. I'm a life member there. And some of the clubs initially in the early that weren't happy for their young stars, like a Batain, to come to Frankston, but they learn so much and they bring back all that knowledge to the club.
It's definitely worth it. I think they got over that now. They sort of say, look, they can gain a lot from playing turf. And there's three clubs, of course, you know, Dandenong and Casey are others that some of our local guys get to.
The guy that really impressed me commentating on the cricket a little bit last year was Peltzer. Is it Wade Peltzer?
Wade Peltzer,
as a keeper, he was just brilliant, I thought. I haven't seen anything better, which comes down to there's a lot of great players that never had the opportunity to play at a high level because of circumstances. They just weren't in the right place at the right time. You'd agree with that?
There was a guy called Gunston who was a Bush Bradman from Stawell, made more than 100 centuries. He came down and played league footy at South Melbourne, played a little bit with Richmond, but he was a farmer and his dad needed him back on the farm. And so Henry was probably the best cricketer in the Victorian bush not to be able to really show those skills at Sheffield Shield and senior club level for so long, but purely circumstance. And same with footy, you know, there's so many stories of those Buntons of the bush.
Yeah, but even the guys that did play, like district cricket, I'm thinking Alan Seiler, who we were talking Gary Sobers. He was a poor man's Gary Sobers. He used to open the bowling, bowl off spin. I think he played, he did play for the state, but didn't get, you know, the time obviously just wasn't right. He could have played for Australia. Gary Watts down at Fitzroy, who I played with, he was a fantastic player. Could have played for Australia.
But yeah, they all came from Maryborough.
Neil Buzzard, Neil Buzzard,
country boys.
Neil Buzzard at Carlton.
Country boys have time to talk. It's nice.
Such a shame. You know, really, you have to be at the right place at the right time sometimes, which is probably why you and I didn't, you know.
Yeah, I was in the right place, and I reckon I got the most out of my career. Absolutely added 10% to any talent I had. So I'm quite happy to go with what I got. Ken, the clock's getting away from working our next guest thing, but it's been absolutely fantastic having you here for the last hour or so. Join us, part of the cricket show, and we'll talk about the books, and you've got a couple other things you want to just mention before you do go.
Yeah, so for the people, all the books should be available at your best local bookshops at Robinson's in Frankston, but if you want to go online, they're at cricketbooks.com.au, cricketbooks, one word, .com.au. The pictorial history is $50. Great Australian Cricket Stories is $25. But always a pleasure to come in and talk cricket live with you, lads.
Absolutely, and it's been fantastic, Ken. And you can try the bookshops, or you can contact you online there. And just a local guy, Matt Eliza.
Yep.
And
playing in the six at the moment.
Playing in the six.
Yeah.
But still playing. That's the main thing.
But our game's been called off today. The other mob couldn't bring up a side.
They knew they were up against the great Kenny Peake.
Oh, no. Phil Leonard, he's our captain.
Oh, well, that explains it.
And he's much better than me. but a lovely boy. But, gee, there's such a fraternity. I walked in there and they said to me, Kenny, how old are you? I said, oh, 61. Oh, yeah, that's
You're
great.
In this team.
No, I was the oldest there by far. Yeah. So I was the eldest statesman. So now I'm allowed to hand out fines because I am the oldest. So Phil got 50 in the first game, didn't raise his cap. I said, right, that's a fine. Yeah. And the boys like that. That's fine, Phil, that's fine.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
All right, so cricketbooks.com.au. Kenny Peake, some fantastic books. Great Christmas presents for any of you people who love a bit of sport. We're going to have a break here in the locker room and we'll come back and we'll chat to Carr Edwards from Park.
Eview Real Estate Partners know that buying, selling or leasing a property is a major event in a person's life. Eview understand and have a team of people who are committed to making your real estate experience as stress-free as possible. Thinking of a career in real estate? Positions now available all over Melbourne. For more, call Eview on 8781 3888 or online at eview.com.au. Expect extraordinary. Eview, now you're at home. A station sponsor. And sponsoring Taking Care of Business every Friday from 11 a.m.
Jalna is an Australian-owned second-generation family business that makes us very fussy about what we put into every delicious, creamy pot of Jalna yogurt. For 55 years, we've insisted that it's free from artificial sweeteners, preservatives, gelatin and colouring. In fact, anything unnatural. Only Golden Valley milk, pure ingredients and friendly cultures, hot set in the traditional manner. Simple and pure the way food should be. From our family to yours. Jalna, a little pot of purity. A station sponsor.
Did you know that the Bendigo Community Bank branches support our local sporting clubs? Currently they support Mornington Peninsula Nepean Football League, Mornington Peninsula Junior Football League, Mornington Peninsula Cricket Association, MPCA Umpires Association, Mornington Netball Association, Nepean Netball Association, as well as RPPFM. With all the usual banking facilities and financial advice, our sponsor, the Bendigo Community Bank branches in Rye, Dramana and now in Rosebud, are supporting the local community and putting the people back into banking. Our sponsor, Bayside Nissan Frankston, has some big news. One unbelievable deal at one unbelievable finance rate. And what does that mean?
That means one great finance deal across the Nissan range, including the family-proof X-Trail range, the European design Qashqai range, Pulsar and Pathfinder ranges, and on popular Navara models. It's the big one at Nissan. Find your local dealer at nissan.com.au.
Nissan, innovation that excites. Check our sponsor, Bayside Nissan Frankston.
Approved private and ABN buys only.
And welcome back to the Bendigo Bank Cricket Broadcast. Tide playing Hastings. And Neil Williams, Jordan's with us at the moment. And I'm just adjusting some of the levels here. Beautiful, because we're joined by, I'll call you a local legend, Dougie Dial. Does that sound all right, Doug?
I'll take that, thanks, Neil.
Okay. Doug's from the Tide Cricket Club, and there's a... there's lots of things we can talk to you about, because one of the things you've been involved in, which I know people from the association are very keen, is sort of like club historian, and you've also taken on a role with the MPCA, which was started by Simon Fiedler all those years ago, and you're sort of taking on a bit of a role there. But fantastic role, I think, club historian. It's a rip of a role.
Well, it is, and it probably started for me about 25 years ago when I was chasing up a little bit of stuff at the State Library.
Mm.
And I started reading stuff that I never even heard of or seen or even talked about by even locals at Tyre, but more so even others playing cricket and football. So it got me to think, and I wouldn't mind sort of putting some history together of this club, which I started to do for our centenary year in 1992-93. Is that we started in 1892.
One of those clubs, many clubs in this way, who started with W.G. Grayson, the big tour in the 1890s.
That's true. That was the catalyst of local cricket, and more so on this side of the peninsula, other than the peninsula, you know, the Port Phillip side.
Yeah, Crib Point and Boney are two other examples of clubs that started in that same year.
Yeah, that's correct.
That's about as much as I know. Yeah, the rest is all up to you, mate.
Yeah, well, cricket and sport in general started to kick off here because of the railway line. That was what it brought people to move in and settled in Hastings, Tyabb, even down to Balnarringan, Crib Point or Stony Point more so then.
Hmm.
And then in probably the turn of the century into there, when the Naval Depot opened up in 1912, that really probably put more people down to this area to work, etc. So anyway, getting back to what my role has been, is I pulled together by going through local newspapers, pulling together our history.
Mm.
And we were very lucky because we had a family which was the name of the Nobles, who religiously put things in the local paper. So every week we were able to just about get scores and little anecdotes from around the club. So we put that together for our centenary. And I think there's only about two or three seasons that we're missing data from. So it's a... And if you actually get a chance to go and look in the back wall, you'll see the comprehensive...
Wow.
Did you go on the internet as well and look back at sort of the journal articles and also some of the newspapers?
Yep, that's right, Jordan. There's a great asset which is called Trove, which is the National Library. It's a little bit slow on updating. There's a little bit of dispute because of what the Murdoch Press actually owns some of that, so they're not releasing it up. So from 1949, I think it's hard to get any stuff in Trove. But Frankston Library have got some early newspapers, and Rosebud Library have also got early newspapers. I've done a bit of work also at the Mornington Museum, which has got papers from the 1920s, which has been really helpful.
How long did it take you to research and compile all the history of the club?
It's probably taken 10 years at least, and in a way I'm still doing it, because you do find little things when I borrow school books from other clubs, and if they're lucky enough to have data that I'm missing, which is really great. So, and we're really lucky because also we had, I've got every scorebook from 1962 to this day from Tyab. So that, you know, that is a fantastic asset to have. And we've got some scorebooks from the 1950s, 1930s. I've got one from 1908.
Gee.
And even one from 1895. So we're a very lucky club in that regard. And as Neil was saying about Simon, Simon is similar with Mornington, very lucky club, that information has been available.
Yeah, so your role in the MPCA, maybe we can talk a bit about
what
you're up to there.
Probably 2 or 3 years ago, talking with Scott Marone, one of the board members.
Yes, and a local tyre boy.
Yep, wish he was still around, but... We got talking about how much little was known in the MPCA history.
Yep.
Even though Simon's done a great job in pulling together records.
Yes.
Higher scores. Well, someone just hit a boundary. And best individual efforts, like hat tricks and 10 wickets and that sort of stuff. We had no idea about, say, who played in the 1920 Premiership team.
That was four to Aaron Wilson down the ground then. Yep, okay. Good.
And bringing some of those names back in. So, yeah, because they are nearly all, when you look at that history, it's all family names from the district.
Yep.
Whether that's Mornington or Rosebud, whatever, they're usually all connected. So I've always felt very keen on promoting those people, those names back into the modern day, I suppose. And part of doing that was, it branched out into other things, and I've actually run a database now with, it might sound very strange to you guys and the listeners, but every game ever played is what I'm trying to do.
Wow.
Which is, as you know, a massive task.
Yeah, so, it's enormous.
So I'm pulling that together in just an Excel spreadsheet at the moment.
Would you work on that pretty much every day?
Well, I'm a bit retired now.
So go a bit more time.
Forced out, so yeah, your answer's true. I fiddle in that nearly every day doing something, even if it's only for half an hour or so.
Of course, the last, 10 years almost, it's been a bit easier with the internet stores things.
Yep.
But it doesn't always tell you the stories behind the games either.
Well, it doesn't, and that is another thing that I'm hoping that other clubs start to come on board as well.
Yep.
And produce those stories. I mean, I've done it for Tyab, and I've done it to a smaller degree out to the wider cricket community. But I these are stories that make it. It is not all scores.
Yep.
Would you be pretty much one of the only club historians in this area?
There's a few clubs have got people who probably dabble in it.
Yeah.
I know Normie Jardine has kept a great record of Heather Hill.
Yep.
And obviously Simon in Mornington, and Bonio has also got a long history of...
Ian Dale did a great job there for many years, yes.
I know down at Flinders, the Munday family,
yep.
They've been keen on creating the Flinders history. And you've got, even at Hastings, that we're playing out here today, Greg Bradshaw, they've got books back into the 50s, which is pretty rare in most clubs nowadays. Now, they've either lost them, they've been burnt in fires, even, a car has been blown up and someone's lost, had all the books in there. So every club's got their little story about why they haven't got their history together. So I just want us all to work together.
Yeah.
And maybe we can come up with something that eventually we can all put it up into My Cricket.
Hmm.
So you'll be able to go back.
That'd be great, wouldn't it? Yeah. So how much of a challenge is it to find some of those? Which are the hardest decades, do you think, to find information in? Because some years the local paper has got plenty of stuff, you mentioned that, but there's other years when there's hardly a mention of local cricket.
That's correct. Probably 1950s, they didn't put in full scorecards.
Yep.
Like you might have got, you know, a score and a couple of top players.
And that's it.
And that's it. Yeah. So to work out then who might have played is difficult. 1912-13 is basically no record. I think there was a dispute with the local newspaper at the time.
Okay.
I know that's happened in football as well.
Yeah, it happens from
year to year. So they just didn't publish any of the records, which is a shame.
Yeah, it is. So, that one's just come off the thick edge there from Hearn. It's gone in the air deep past point. And good running to get back for two, which has taken the score into the 40s, 44. Hearn and Wilson both batting. Wilson is 19 and Hearn 22, I think. And we're talking with Dougie Dyle from Tyre, who's the... Well, he's a historian. We do lots of stuff around the club, of course, Dougie.
Yeah. Well, we come here today and I've got to put the jug on and put the pot in the warmer. And, you know, there's never an idle moment around a footy or cricket club. So
never a shortage of things to do.
That's right.
Yeah. Look, when you started delving into the history, were there a couple of surprises that you picked up along the way? So, oh, that's a fascinating little story or surprise along the way.
It probably is, and not probably many know. There was a gentleman named... Cole Menterplay played at Hastings, and he took 6 wickets in 6 balls.
Wow.
Which, you know, we've got heard of a lot of double hat tricks.
Yeah.
This one is, I think it comes down to a quadruple hat trick.
Oh, gosh.
So that was one of the unique things that I discovered.
What was his first? Cole Menterplay.
Cole Menterplay. There was a Cole Menterplay Jr. is still alive in Hastings.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was his father.
Other statistics in terms of.
I've also collected in there as a number of centuries, and I'm up to about 910 centuries have been made. 8,900 centuries have been made on the Mornington Peninsula.
That's enormous, isn't it? Yeah. If you're asked to pick a number, I don't know whether you'd ever go that high, but that's incredible.
But that goes way back to the 1890s.
Yeah.
And when you look at someone like Robbie Bedford, who's probably got over 40.
Yeah.
Jeff Slocum would have, I think, got 39, I think. And then you've got Bill Martin, who was a great player at Mainridge, Dramana, Rye, and Redhill.
Yep.
And I've tried to pull those.
Ray Cairns and Barnier would have had 15 or thereabouts.
That's right, he got over 10,000 runs.
Yeah.
So I've tried to pull those great players that I've known from my picking his data up and put them in to one catalogue. So, because players change clubs.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Trying to get, who are the top 10 run getters on the peninsula.
Yep.
They're things that I will eventually be able to pull out.
Nice. Yeah, that'd be fascinating.
And even wickets. I mean, we've got a gentleman here who took over 900 wickets, which was Jack Baker. And he never came and started playing here until he was 33.
Wow.
Yeah.
What year did Jack Baker play?
He started here in the late 1890s and kept playing until he was 62 in the A-grade side. And he just lived over the back here. You can just see right through where that... Tower is. It's about where we live.
Okay, that's it. That's we're pointing towards from Tyre to the
Western Port Highway.
The Western Port Highway at the back part there, you can see big Telstra Tower of some kind, and out in that area. Okay.
Tyre's early day, we played down on the little ground, and Neil would have played.
I've played cricket there. It's on the corner of
which is a beautiful little ground.
Hastings Road and Mornington Road, Tyre Road. Yeah, great little ground. That's where we used to play all the time.
So, we moved up here in about 1977 when the football club reformed. So this ground became a bit, better quality. The cricket first moved up here, and obviously it was getting a bit small because we had 5 teams down in that little room. Things were getting a bit tight.
You also do sort of the statistics and that sort of stuff for the football club as well.
I do for the whole football league. So I've put together games played from all the way back to 1908.
would it be easier to find football sort of archives rather than cricket?
It is. Newspapers covered football far more than they did cricket. Don't know why that was. Maybe because it was about a number of people who went and watched.
Yeah,
as you can
see, surprise me all.
That's right.
Just a couple of score updates here for sign matters. We'll start with the sub-district area. Carrum Downs 1 for 53 against YCW. A good start for them. They needed that. Tootgarook playing Carrum, none for 97 off 28. Trav French just got his 50, and Corey De Bruin is the other opening batsman in the 40s. Dramana were 1 for 20. Haven't had an update there, playing against Bellum Park. Balnarring at the drinks break, 2 for 56 off 19, playing Sky. So they're the updates, and here it's none for 44, Hastings against Tybe in what's a pretty tight tussle.
It looks like Tookaruka are having a good start to the season.
They are, yeah, they'll be right up there for sure.
We played Carrum Downs last week, and I thought they might struggle today, but it's good to see them get a good...
Yeah. Because it's a tough job for them. They had to chase 314 last
week. Right,
that's not so easy. So when you bat first and you can set up the game, it's a little bit different.
And it hasn't changed. It's always been that way.
It has, hasn't it? Absolutely right. Any of those big scores that sort of spring to mind? Because I reckon back in the 70s, when cricket pretty strong down here,
very
I reckon.
Strong.
And but even so. You didn't see a lot of scores of a team getting 300. You know, 220, 230 was always a good score because the bowlers were also pretty strong as well as having some good batting. So I just wonder if you'd get any of those huge scores around, like your 314 last week or something.
Well, I'm not sure what the highest score is, but I think I left all that up to Simon because I knew he'd done that.
Yeah.
But I know Sides have made 400 plus.
Yeah.
But you're right, in the 70s, that's when I played most of my cricket. It was a tighter game, I think. You know, the bowlers were, whether they were better or they were better, bowled a better line, I'm not sure.
And there was a two-piece ball, so the ball moved around
a bit. Yeah. And we had some stars in,
absolutely.
Jeff Slocum there before, but every team had their two or three
real stars. Yeah.
You know, you got even Jack Peacock.
Yep. Oh, he was a quality player.
Quality player.
Yep.
Games were really, every one of them went nearly to the wire.
Yeah. Yep.
You played Mount Eliza against Brian McHugh and Tony McWilliams and
Bob McDonald,
Bob Hogan.
And Hogan,
they were quality players.
Yep.
And every provincial side, and Tybe was in provincial at that stage.
Yeah.
They all had two or three real good players.
In the 1970, did you end up winning any premierships?
We went from district in 73, 74, and then within 2 years we'd won provincial 75, 76. That was under Jeff Slocum, who was a quality player, but so he led the guys really well. He created a bit of a team, and we had a lot of young tyre people who come through that stage, and that led on to us winning it again in 82, 83 under Jeff.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I umpired that game.
You did indeed.
Yeah.
Now, I've got a photo at home.
And oh dear.
Billy shows you there with your, I think you had a beard bigger than mine at that stage.
Yeah, I had a beard, but look how youthful my skin is now.
Yeah,
so it's protected my skin. That's why I look. That's my secret to looking so youthful.
Who was it? Who was at the other end with it that day, Neil?
Oh, wow. There's a good question.
You're in the photo.
Yeah, they dragged me in. Close to spend money across your bar, you thought I was a good bloke. Possibly, because that was about the second or third year I'd umpired. I reckon it might have been Frank Booker.
Okay.
It might have just been his last season, Frankie Booker.
I haven't got the answer, I'll have a look it up.
No.
It'll be in our book.
Well, somebody else asked me about that, I know some of the umpires I umpired with, and Jeff Northfield was one, Peter Finney was one in finals, but I can't always associate who did a particular game.
Well, it's a long time ago now.
Well, yeah, that's right. I thought when your memory faded that you actually were better at remembering the old stuff, not the current stuff.
Dougie, in terms of your playing career, when did you finish up?
I only looked at that the other night. It was 96, 97. I played down in the lower grades, and I can remember the day that made me sort of stop, and got a quick minute, I'll go through it. We were playing, and I was in about our fifth, which was probably in the lowest grade around at the time, and we played against Pines, I think it was, and Alan Lico was playing, and Colin Bowes. And both of them were fine cricketers, but Colin, exceptional batsman.
Oh, superb, yes.
I think he made 220 the week before, and I think he got about 180 against us. And we had a very young kid side. You know. I remember walking back here going, that's it, I've had enough. I can't do this anymore. Watch blokes with quality belting kids around. So that was it. But I'd had a pretty long career. I started in 1963. When I was only nine, I played in the under-16s, so I had a pretty long career, and I was quite happy. And even though I only won the one senior premiership, it was actually against you, Neil. So
okay.
At Baxter, we played. And
plenty of people played. Beat me, yeah.
The three juniors were here as well.
Yeah. Yep. All the way through juniors here. We never had under-14s when I started. So
yeah. Okay.
Either you're playing under-16s, or that was it. So I'm. He's only a little fella at nine. I mean, I love cricket.
Yeah.
Just wanted to get out there. You know, and I even my mum today said, we always knew where you were because you'd be down there watching cricket.
Just got a couple of other score updates for sign matters. I'll whip through those in the district area. Mainridge 2 for 89. Holmes out for 50. Noel got Some runs as well. I'm not exactly sure how many you end up with. Tigers 4 for 50. Flinders 1 for 59. Red Hill 4 for 79 now. Whitling has 3 for 22. Simon Dart out for 21. So bit of a challenge there for Red Hill, and see what sort of score they can end up with. Baden Pellow back on, but I haven't had an update on that one yet, but I will get that. In fact, 303 is the score for Main Ridge. So there, that's the updates for provincial and district. Just see if there's any newies for provincial. We'll just whip through what I've got. Mount Eliza 2 for 103 off the first 20 against Muradak. That's out of character, be that aggressive. Mornington were none for 35. Baxter 3 for 45. Crib Point were 2 for 12 off the first 18. Sounds a little slow, doesn't it? And Pearsdale 3 for 25, Langwarrin were 3 for 20. So I'll get some more updates on those in a little while. And I know Jordan, it's getting close to 3 o'clock, and you have to head off in a few moments. So we'll just have a bit of a chat here. We'll have a short word from some of our sponsors, and then we'll bring Pete Walker in to join the commentary team as well. But what are your thoughts on your first day of the local cricket with us, Jordan?
To soccer usually, but I've enjoyed it.
And, yep.
It's good here to have a chat with a legend of the club, and
absolutely
alongside you as well. It's good.
Oh, yeah. When you get the wild people, some people call you legends, don't they, Dougie? We can fool them now because they don't know any better.
Yeah. I think it's something that happens when you're over 60.
I think you might be right.
We've got no figures to prove it, but anyway.